Well, let's hear the tale. Whatever tale you have to tell.
Well, to begin with, I guess I was a senior in high school at the Davey Howard High School in Atlanta, an overcrowded, segregated high school. And as one who was considered a pretty smart boy, voted the most intellectual of his class, active in everything from student newspaper to athletics, all of the scholastic activities around the school. And also as one who, through the years, had no idea or no thoughts, I guess due to conditions and circumstances of ever attending an integrated school, north or south. It was in the, about 1st of November, December, my senior year.
What year was this now?
This was 1952, school year 1952-53, when a man who was on leave from Howard University came to my high school, represented the National Service and the Scholarship Fund for Negro Students. His mission was to interest allegedly promising or scholarly Negro students in attending integrated schools in the North. My teachers, my principal, my counselors in high school felt that I ought to talk to this man, Mr. Paul Lawrence.
Let's hold it now that they can check on voice, just to be sure we're doing all right. Yeah, just go ahead.
Well,
Mr. Lawrence, was it?
Mr. Lawrence, on leave from Howard University, as I understand it, came and spent a good bit of time explaining to us what was involved in the integrated school and what we might expect, and generally trying to generate our enthusiasm on the part of myself and other of my classmates. I became intensely interested. I guess it was, to some extent, it gratified my ego. Substantiated some feelings of superiority, I guess, over my fellow students. This, in a sense, to me as a young high school senior, made me, convinced me that, helped me to believe that I was as smart as my grades or my teachers might have thought I was. Mr. Lawrence recommended to me, among a list of schools, specifically Yale, Dartmouth College, and DePaul University. I was primarily interested in Dartmouth. I had seen stories and pictures of its winter carnival. I talked to its members of its alumni here in Atlanta. President of the local alumni association had said, we have 10 boys in Atlanta who have applied for admission to Dartmouth. We have a little scholarship money, and we'd be happy to give you this scholarship money, be it ever so limited, because we feel that if you, as a Negro, could get exposed to a Dartmouth education, that you might be able to return south and be of some benefit to your people. Now, as I reflect on what Mr. Fortuna, who was an officer of the Citizens Southern National Bank of Atlanta, I'm not really sure what he meant by come back and help your people. I'm not so sure that today, having finished school, law school, and college, that I might not resent his statement to come back and help your people.
Do you think he knew what he meant?
I'm not certain. I'm not sure if he meant to come back and help your people to clean my house better, to take care of my children better, in a better fashion, or whether he meant to come back and make democracy really live in the South.
He probably couldn't know, could he? He could know on reflection he was not thinking about making you a better yard man.
No, but he...
He did not mean that.
I kind of had some notion he felt that if I'd gone to Dartmouth, I would come back and I could be an exceptional school principal, a good school teacher. I was never sure that he envisioned my leaving Dartmouth College, going to the Harvard Law School, coming back, becoming...
But you are a lawyer.
Yes. Not so much that, but I'm never sure that even with a Dartmouth degree and a Harvard diploma that he would have appreciated my being a junior law partner, a law clerk to the general counsel of the CNS Bank. I feel certain that what he meant by my helping my people would be to come back and assume some position or some role of leadership in the Negro community, wherein I would have assumed a kind of Booker Washington role in the Atlanta community. Do you want to stop this for a while, for a moment?
Do what you're supposed to. We'll enjoy ourselves.
Surely, get the ice and stuff, and the waters can help themselves. I'm just not really certain what the man meant. But he did say to me that of the 10 boys, you're the only Negro, and we have some notion that if you get up there because of your sense of mission, that you might do better scholastically than your white counterparts or classmates would do. He pointed out also that the scholastic record of white graduates of the high schools in Atlanta and Dartmouth was not very good. Now, in retrospect, I attribute this to the quality of Southern education as compared with the general qualifications and college preparedness of the average Dartmouth student. I think that he was addressing himself more to that than some slothfulness on the part of high school students and it. White high school students in Atlanta. At any rate, I never went to Dartmouth, although this was my great dream. I even now have the hope that should my wife and I be blessed with a son, that somehow or other I can instill in him some notion about Dartmouth. I've never quite gotten over the notion of not having gone to Dartmouth, but during the time of my application, my counselors in high school, it seems that I was the first Negro in my school to apply to take the College Board entrance exam, and there was some misunderstanding of the procedures. I remember quite vividly my parents, in conjunction with other parents whose children had applied to schools like Sarah Lawrence and other schools in the East, requiring the College Board entrance exam, trying to find out why their children could not be admitted to the exam to be given at M University on the next day, March 14th. I remember that quite well. I remember my displeasure, my hurt, my sorrow at not being able to take the exam. At that time, being filled with some notion, having no notion that the College Board entrance exam would be extremely difficult for me, that I would not make a score that would qualify me for entrance at Dartmouth. At any rate, I did not get to go to Dartmouth, Dartmouth being a school which has chosen all of the members of its freshman class certainly on April 1st. I did, however, get accepted at DePauw University, a small Midwestern school in Greencastle, Indiana.
Let me interrupt. You did not take the examination at all.
I did not take the College Board entrance exam at all. That's right.
The problem was not a refusal on the grounds of your examination. It was just the fact you had not...
I had not complied with a condition preceding.
Right.
And the condition preceding was to take the college entrance exam, and I had not done that.
Yes, that's what killed it up.
That's right. I did, however, apply to DePaul and was accepted and felt that, well, I always had the impression if I didn't go to DePaul that the school would go to pot. And by go to pot, I mean that had not I gone to that campus, that the school just couldn't have done without me. This impression you get from the tremendous response that you get from organizations campus-wise and even city-wise in Greencastle, Indiana. The two banks, Citizens, First Citizens Bank, as I remember, I'm not certain about the title. I'm certain about Central National Bank because that's where I ultimately opened up my checking account. With even the banks in town wrote you to say that we understand that you're a prospective DePaul student. We welcome you to Greencastle, and we welcome you to come in and be a part of not only the school, but our bank in the town.
Let's check this now, just a moment.
Fine. Okay. I received letters of invitation from every Greek letter fraternity on the DePaul campus. Fraternities were given this list of prospective students. Without regard to race, they wrote me inviting me up for dances, assuring me that if I would come up for the weekend that I could have a date. Ironically, there were no Negro co-eds on the DePaul campus. And I know that had I shown up on the DePaul campus that that would have been great consternation. At the Monon Railroad Station or at the bus station that this fellow Vernon Jordan turned out to be a Negro, and it would have created some problems for the fraternity inviting me. However, I did not go, but I did go. I did not go for the fraternity weekends, but I did go to DePaul to attend a educational guidance clinic sponsored by the Admissions Department in cooperation with the Psychology Department and other departments in the school. Well, I, along with or maybe 60 other prospective college students, spent a week finding out what college was all about, taking the examinations that one usually takes as a part of the college orientation program. It was there that I became quite disconcerted that here Vernon Jordan, third in his class, young man who felt that he'd been everywhere, seen everything, and knew everybody. All of a sudden, I found out that on the basis of my test, that I couldn't read. And I was reading less than 200 words a minute. And my counselor at the guidance clinic suggested that I would probably do very well at a state-supported school. But he wasn't sure as to how well I would do in a private school and suggested that though I was accepted, that I might even consider going to a state school or that I would probably do all right at DePaul if I took a reading course. So I returned home and took a reading course at Atlanta University. It was that time that I experienced some little problem with my parents, and that having indicated to them that I wanted to go to DePaul, and I indicated this to them in spite of the fact that I had been told that at DePaul that my social life would be somewhat limited and that there were no Negro girls and that the dating of white girls was taboo. I'd also been told that I'd have to go 40 miles to Indianapolis to get my hair cut because Negroes weren't permitted to get their haircuts in downtown Greencastle. I did not know at the time that the most popular barber in Greencastle was a Negro who ultimately would not cut my hair because I was Negro. And he told me this in the presence of, well, while he was cutting a white student's hair.
He told you this, the barber told you this.
Well, the barber told me this after I went to DePaul, and my hair got long, and I sought out a barber. And an upper classmate of mine, the Negro. And I went into Barney's Barbershop, Bernie's Barbershop, as I remember. And there sat a white boy in a chair, a Negro barber. I'd come from a segregated society where Negroes had always cut my hair, so this was commonplace with me. And I said to him, come in to see if I can get a haircut. And Bernie said to me, well, I'm sorry, but in effect, he said, I don't cut color folks' hair. This, for me, was kind
he
of...
He owned the shop, or was he an employee?
He owned the shop. It was a shop that he had inherited from his father. He'd been cutting hair in Greencastle 20 years before I got there. And Bernie said to me, no, I can't cut your hair. And I can't cut your hair. He said this in effect because you're colored. And my first reaction was to push Bernie through the window. I didn't push Bernie through the window. I just said thank you and left with a great sense of embarrassment and hurt. It was just something I'd never experienced before, a Negro telling me while he's cutting a white man's hair that he can't cut my hair because I'm Negro. This was a pretty bad experience. At any rate, I suffered through that. And
do you think he suffered through it?
I don't. No, I don't think that Bernie, God rest his soul, suffered through that at all. I think that Bernie... felt that he had to do this to placate his white clientele. Bernie was the best at that time. The white boys at DePaul were wearing crew cuts. Crew cuts were very popular. Bernie was the best barber in town. And all vast majority of students went to Bernie for their haircuts. But also the better, the more elite businessmen in Greencastle went to Bernie. The students had told Bernie to make them any difference whose hair he cut. Just so he gave them a good crew cut. But Bernie felt some fidelity or loyalty to these students, and he just refused to cut Negroes' hair. The bulk of his business was student business because Bernie closed his shop in the summer. When students were away from town, away from the campus, they would only go to his shop upon request of the local businessmen in town who depended upon Bernie as they had depended upon his father to cut their hair. All of this I told to my parents. Then one day I went home from my part-time job during the summer and found a note on my bed where my mother says to me very sweetly, Vernon, we love you and we want you to go to college where you want to go to college, but we kind of feel like if you went to Howard University, predominantly Negro school in Washington, D.C., that academically, economically, and socially, you might be happier. But you go where you want to go. And I took them at their word and chose to go to DePaul.
What were their reasons for trying to steer you from DePaul?
Well, I think that here were Negro parents, both from rural communities in Georgia, both of whom had grandparents who were slaves, who were to some extent conditioned to the Southern way of life, and were never quite accustomed. I could never quite adjust to the thought of their boy being, even in Greencastle, Indiana, the only Negro in a class of 400 students. And they felt that their boy, their baby, their prize would be happier and would have less frustrations if he went to a predominantly Negro institution.
Well,
They just felt that he'd get along better and that they would have less problems and fewer problems with him, and he'd have less problems and fewer problems with his peers. Or if he went to an all-Negro school, I should never forget my father, who on an occasion when I had brought a white boy from North Carolina home with me. And I forget Bob's first name, but Bob drove home with me and another white boy from Dublin, Georgia. And he couldn't get a bus out that night, so he spent the night with me. And he slept in one twin bed, and my brother was away at school, and I slept in another. And in the middle of the night, my father got up out of bed and came in the room and cut on the light and stood there with tears in his eyes and cut the light out and went back to bed and said to my mother that, you know, this democracy thing is really here, and it's right here in my house. There in one bed is my own son, and in the other bed is a white boy from South Carolina with a sharp southern accent who says yes sir and no sir and who eats grits with the same enjoyment as my boy, who likes biscuits and who likes sausage, and says to me, a colored man, yes, sir, and no, sir, and says to my wife, yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am. This for my father was a traumatic experience, something that...
Could you analyze the experience?
Well...
back on it?
Well, yeah, I think that here again you have to look at this man's background. He was one of 17 children.
Your father.
My father, yes. From one of the worst counties in the state, Jasper County, Georgia. That's Monticello. He had heard stories of people being lynched. I'm not so sure that he had not seen the results of brutalities there in Jasper County, who left home with a circus because he worked from sunup to sundown. His daddy got all of the money, who was a boy, a family of 17 children, saw the entire family divide a watermelon when the mom and the papa took one half and the 17 children divide the other half. A boy who never knew that the chicken had anything but feet or necks until such time that he got enough money to buy his own chicken. And he left home out of a great sense of disillusionment and disappointment and really in a sense out of rebelliousness to the system under which his father found accommodating and the way of life in Jasper County, Georgia. I think that somewhere during that night, after having had dinner and conversations with this white boy from South Carolina, who seemed to have been a good friend of his son's.
I gather he was a decent, well-mannered white boy.
Very well-mannered. A boy who was... not completely void of prejudices. I'm not so sure that I could have gone to his house and spent the night. And I'm sure that this, to some extent, bothered him, that here is this Negro boy from Georgia who can extend to me these courtesies, but I'm not so sure that I would receive the warmth and kindredness of I'm not so sure that this warmth would be extended to him and my household. I think that Bob felt that I'm not very certain that I could even approach my parents with the idea of bringing a Negro home. I'm not even sure that he told his folks that he had spent the night with Vernon Jordan, a colored boy who's in school with him up there. I can't say this with any certainty. This is just a kind of feeling that I have. At any rate, against the mild objection to my parents, I went on to Greencastle. My parents took me to school, along with my younger brother. We all drove to Greencastle, and we did everything that the little brochure says, from go to the tent on the other side of Goban Church on the DePaul campus. We were assigned housing. My parents stayed with the local Methodist minister, Elmer Harvey, who was very charming and very gracious. And I think that this in and of itself was a real experience for my parents. My father, who was a government employee in mail service, and my mother, who paid my tuition by making food tasty and pretty as a cateress. And it always been in a domestic role. This, I think, for them was a real experience. Certainly it was unique and different. But they took me and they left me, and I should never forget my daddy standing out in front of Old East College saying goodbye, saying to me, son, you know, everybody is looking for you to do well. And certainly I expect more of you than they do, and I feel like you're going to do all right, and I'm glad you're here. And I think that after they got to the DePaul campus, after they experienced the friendliness, the warmth of the campus, and the open kindredness of the people, that they were satisfied that that their boy had made a good choice, and that they had reared him right, they'd reared him to do the right thing, to think pretty much the right thing, to conduct himself like a gentleman. And they were reasonably certain that he would do all right in this atmosphere. And I think they came to Greencastle that weekend curious and concerned and to some extent worried. But I think they left satisfied that their boy, though in a situation totally foreign to him, a situation where he was the only Negro in his class, one of five Negroes in a student body of 5,000, one who would have to live with two white boys whom he'd never seen before. I think they left going back down Highway 41 confident that all would be well, and that their boy would do all right. They also left confident that though there might be some small financial strain or something, that their boy, that they could pay his bills. And they did. They did it. They paid him in advance. His tuition was never late. And he never had to be concerned as to whether or not his funds were forthcoming. His only job was to get his lessons. I started off circling behind. I took reading for four semesters. I should never forget in a speech course, and I took speech. Speech was recommended to me through my faculty advisor because I'd won several oratorical contests in high school, so I took sort of an advanced speech course. And I was really at a loss because in this speech course, my classmates talked about plays that they had done, books that they'd read. I was somewhat at a loss because during the whole time I was in high school, I never really read a full novel. And my first novel was the mayor of Casterbridge, or Thomas Hardy. And I'm not sure that's a good book for anybody to get started on. It's full of pessimism. But that was my first novel. And I think that early in that speech class, I realized that my segregated education had been inadequate. And not only my segregated education, but my Southern education was somewhat inadequate for me to cope with the academic problems that I faced at a school that's as good as DePaul.
Have you thought of what the graduate of Peoria High School would feel in certain colleges?
No, I haven't really.
Same thing, isn't it?
I suspect that at a school like DePaul, he would feel as almost as insecure as I was, especially if he was the average student. I'm not so sure what the student who was an upper 10% of his class would have felt.
I don't know if Peoria has the point. I don't know what
I understand.
He would like, but
sure.
Pull it out a million places.
I think there were some students. DePaul's very selective, highly selective, as a matter of fact. Yeah.